This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The first Jewish person to come to North America arrived in the middle of the 18th century. Esther Brando landed in Canada, or New France as it was then known, in 1738. Her story has fascinated Toronto artist Heather Hermont since she first came across it 10 years ago. Heather Hermont's multimedia performance, Ribcage, This Wide Passage, opens at the Fire Hall Theatre this coming week. And Heather Hermont joins me on the phone this morning. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
How did you first find out about Esther Brando?
Well, it was surprisingly late in my life. I wish that I'd known it all my life, but it was when I was a graduate student doing my master's at York University in Toronto, and the director of Ribcage, Diane Roberts, was teaching a performance class called Testimony, Autobiography, and Performance. And she just asked us to do this exercise of researching any chosen ancestor in our family history that we didn't know anything about. And so I was working with a great-grandmother and doing a bunch of research required me to read Jewish history in Canada. And it's in the history that I read, it was on page 3. So I just sort of took over my life from that moment. I was pretty dumbfounded when I came across it.
And what do you know about Esther Brando? Or what do we know, rather?
Do we know? So what we know comes to us through really a record of interrogation in the French Colonial Archive. That's about 3 pages long, in which it's a third-person voice testimony, so or record. So it says, like, she said she did this and she did that. But what we know is that she came from the south of France in Bayonne, in a Jewish community in Bayonne, which was a Jewish community formed from exiles of the Inquisition, primarily in Portugal. And She was purportedly sent by her family to Amsterdam because these Jewish communities were networked throughout Europe, and particularly in coastal regions in France, and Amsterdam was an important center. She was supposedly being sent to her family, and then the boat that she got on supposedly wrecked, and then from that moment, shortly thereafter, she began to dress as a man, live as a man, young man, and did so for about 5 years all over France, before getting on a ship to come to Quebec in 1738. And then at some point, either on the voyage over or upon arrival, she was doubly outed as both female and Jewish. And at that time, in the mid-1730s, Jews were not permitted in the French colonies. So anyone who wasn't Catholic could not be in the colonies. So then she spent a year approximately in Quebec, and during that time, efforts were made to get her to convert to Christianity. And then, purportedly because she refused to convert, she was deported back to France. But she actually disappears from the record after that deportation order is issued, and the machinery grinds on. We lose track of her. So that's what we know about this person. And she is, by all accounts, the first Jewish woman to come to Canada, what is now Canada, but what was then New France. Yeah, so it's a pretty amazing story.
So you said that she was, there was an order to deport her, but we don't even know if she stayed in Canada or was in fact deported, is that right?
We don't really know. No, we don't, because we don't have access to to shipping records from Quebec in those years. So it's just kind of this mystery. It's remained this mystery. We're not really sure what happened.
Now, why did her story appeal to you?
It resonated with me on a number of levels, and all sort of concurrent. So as I'm a queer person, and so I read it first and foremost as a queer story. I'm also somebody who comes from half Jewish, half Christian family. So I read it as of interest for me for those reasons. And also because I was captivated by the what I saw as like kind of an amazing life, a big risk, and must have taken a lot of courage to you know, be 20 years old and set out into the world, whether by choice or not, it's not clear, and live as a man. So, yeah, those are the main reasons why I found it fascinating, and it just sort of, I just kept wanting to know more, so I just kept trying to research and research and research, and sort of the more I knew, the more I felt like I didn't know. So, yeah.
Now, you first came across this story back in 2005, so you've been working on this for over about a decade now. How has that piece evolved over the time?
Well, I encountered it first as an artist because I was in that performance class. So I originally intended to, and I identified primarily as a spoken word artist. So I thought that I would work as a poet with this story and, you know, write a series of spoken word pieces about it. But the more I started working on it, the less I felt that poetry was, like, was going to be the way to do it. It wasn't working for me in the way that I thought that it would. So it ventured into video installation and lots of sound work and physical theater and gesture and all these things that I didn't expect. And a lot of the research that I did, I went over to France and I worked in the archives there, and I went to Portugal and I did a lot of site-specific work, and I journaled through video and sound recording. So I had all of this footage, all of this sound that I gathered. So really it was a slow process of trying to figure out, like, how to tell the story. So to search for the form that I could express in. So it became very multidisciplinary. And then at some point I started to think that it would make sense to collaborate with a musician. So that's when I started working with Jaron Freeman Fox, who some of your listeners here in Vancouver will know. He used to be based here and is now in Toronto. He's an amazing fiddle player. And so we started collaborating and just slowly sewed the piece together as a kind of a combination of spoken word and storytelling, physical theater, his music, which is gorgeous. So it's a little bit like a narrative thread that carries the whole piece. And then I was imagining all of my video recordings to produce a kind of environment for the piece. So I collaborated with a videographer, Emily Young, and a VJ, a live video mixer, Kaya Cirula. So we just basically worked out a live mixed video environment for the piece, so that all of that material that I had gathered could be present in the piece and create the piece, and so that the piece could be more than just an attempt to stage the story of Esther Brando. I wanted also to show what it is to grapple with such an historical tale, what that encounter is like with across the centuries through archives and you know, bigger questions like about belonging and about identity and about the meaning of history and about you know, migration and colonization and all of these dynamics that play into the story. I wanted to find a way to be able to tell all those stories concurrently with somehow entering the life of Esther Brando. So it took a while. You can imagine it took a while to arrive at the show. We actually did a gallery installation performance here in Vancouver back in 2010, which for Tremors Festival, which was the first time that we shared our work publicly. And then from there we moved to an adaptation for theater. So that was, I started in 2005, and then we premiered the theater work in 2010 in Montreal. So now we're back in Vancouver. And in the interim, I've taken on a PhD on the subject as well. So I'm nearing completion of my PhD. So yeah, it's been a 10-year session, ongoing. And there have been I've done other artistic work in different forms as well about the story. So, yeah, it's kind of taken over my life.
I'm wondering, do you use only the factual details that you managed to get about Esther Brando's story, or are there elements you changed, or anything that you speculate and add to her story?
Well, that's the thing about the story, is that it's, I mean, we have these details from these records that we have, which is that original sort of testimony record, and then we have some correspondence between colonial officials in New France and officials in France proper. And while that there's a lot of information there, it's patchy and requires corroboration. And so, for instance, even in the testimony, she claims to have lived and worked in all of these different places in France over the course of 5 years. But then if you kind of tally the length of time she said she worked here, there, and everywhere, it doesn't add up. So that's one of the things that's so productive about this story, is the fact that there are so many holes and gaps. So, but my approach to the story has been not to pin it down to a single definitive narrative arc, because we just can't know. So my approach has rather been to grapple with the fact that we can't know for sure what happened, what motivated her movements, her choices, whether the facts are true, you know, all of these things we don't know. So it does leave open a lot of possibility for speculation. In fact, it's almost necessary to just try to lay out all the different possibilities of through speculation and let them somehow try to coexist. So that's been my take on the story, is to find a form in the theater work that I produce that doesn't that is not conclusive and definitive about this person's life.
What do you hope that audiences will take away from the play?
I hope that people will, well, first of all, it's just such a privilege and joy to be able to share this story, because I've discovered over the years that, you know, when I first found the story, I felt to myself, like, why didn't I know this? Like, I really should have known this story. But then when I asked around, I started to see that even people that I thought were more likely to be in the know also didn't know about this story. So although people have recorded it and worked with it over time, it's not broadly known. So my first, you know, hope is that people take away the not just awareness of the story and share it, because it's a really compelling piece of history. And I hope too that people are moved to think about, you know, the possibilities that kind of collide here in what we now call Canada, and think about, you know, how we can tell stories in a way that's kind of, we're responsible to each other, and we think about what is Canada and what the continuities and discontinuities are historically between, you know, 300 years ago and the present. So, you know, and I hope people are moved by some of those questions.
Well, I know I'm very intrigued. I've just been hearing about this over the last couple of days, and I'm going to definitely try and see the show this week. Thanks very much for talking with me about it.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Toronto artist Heather Hermont. Her performance, Ribcage, This Wide Passage, opens at the Fire Hall Theatre on Wednesday night and runs through until Sunday afternoon. There's a preview on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Tickets are half price for that performance. And there's also a Pay What You Can afternoon show on Wednesday. For more information, you can check out the website firehallartcenter.ca.